This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes... These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment. What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
That said, though, we did have some discussion over lunchtime, and the truth is, I'm being candid with the court, at this point, regardless of even if he called in right now, we don't feel comfortable calling him, nor do we believe he's necessary, so we will be withdrawing our request for additional time, and so that issue has been resolved. We will not be calling him.
Okay, so do you have any additional witnesses that you want to put up?
No, I have spoke with my client at length. He has a strong desire to speak with the jurors, but will be taking my advice and not testifying, believing as I do that the state has failed to meet their burden.
And so you have no other witnesses in addition to your client not testifying, you have no other witnesses?
That's correct. We are ready to arrest in front of the jury.
Okay, so I guess let me finish my conversation with Mr. Peterson. And then, in fact, if you're going to rest, I'll bring the jurors in. I'll let you do that in front of them. I'll send them out of here. Again, I have their phone numbers. If I had to call them off for Monday, I can do so. I'm not prejudging anything. I can hear any renewed motions. And if the case goes forward after that, we can have a charge conference this afternoon. And I would be asking the jurors to be back, say... State, would you have any problem being back here Monday at 9:15?
Yeah.
That's 9:15?
That's fine.
I'll talk to you again if we get to that point. I'll talk to you all about how much time you might be asking for closing arguments, but we could do all that on Monday. So, Mr. Peterson, let me put you under oath. You swear to tell the truth, all truth, nothing but the truth?
I do, Your Honor.
Okay, you can put your hand down. Please state your full name.
Scott Ralph Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N. All
right, and Mr. Peterson, everything remains the same regarding prescription drugs, mental health, alcohol, any of those issues since my last discussion with you, which I think was yesterday. All the answers are still the same?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So your lawyer is telling me that based on the what's been presented so far in the defense presentation, that I'm going to have the jury come back in and you're going to rest in front of the jury. So let me finish the conversation I started with you yesterday about your right to testify. You've had enough time to think about it, to talk to your lawyer about it. He's answered all your questions, talk to your family about it regarding your decision about whether you want to become a witness or not.
I have, Your Honor.
Okay. And again, I'll repeat, you understand, even if it's your lawyer's advice for you not to testify, if you wanted to testify and be a witness, you get to testify. It's one of the fundamental decisions that you get to make. Do you understand that?
I do, Your Honor.
Okay. So understanding all of that and also what we discussed yesterday, have you come to a decision about whether or not you want to become a witness in the case?
I have.
And what is that decision?
I will not testify.
Okay. So I'm going to read the standard jury instruction to them. Then, if we get to that point, both paragraphs regarding the fact that they're not to put any weight in that decision whatsoever, that they will decide whether the state has met its burden of proof based only on the evidence, witnesses, and testimony that they have heard. So my intention would be to bring the jury back in. I'll ask the defense to call their next witness. The defense can rest in front of the jury. I'll then send the jurors home, asking them to be back here on Monday, June 26th. I'm going to ask them to be back at 9 o'clock, and hopefully we can get going right at 9:15. State anything else I need to address before we send the jurors home for the day, and we'll keep working, but they won't be here, or any objection to proceeding in that manner.
Just 1 minute.
Any objection to proceeding in the manner I announced or anything else you need me to address before I bring the jury back in at this point? Defense, anything else that you need to address?
Thank you.
Okay, please bring the jurors back in. Gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Come on in. Once you're back in those seats, you may be seated. All the parties may be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you using the notepads, I'll give you a moment to get those notepads back out. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, when we took our lunch break, we were in the middle of the defense presentation. We're going to resume at that point. Defense, when you are ready, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. At this time, we rest our case.
Okay. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, both the state and the defense having rested their cases, the only thing that remains in the trial is the closing arguments from the lawyers. Then I would be instructing you on the law, and then you would be deliberating your verdicts, and we're going to do all that on Monday. Okay, so the schedule going forward is I'm going to have you out of here momentarily. I'm going to ask you to be back here on Monday, June 26th at 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock, and I know you're veterans at this point, but I'll remind you, Monday's the busiest day in this building, so allow yourself time based on that. And when I have you back in the courtroom Monday morning, we're going to go right into the closing arguments from the lawyers. After that, I will instruct you on the law, and then you will be deliberating your verdicts. So, same admonition as always, ladies and gentlemen. Please do not discuss the facts of the case, the evidence, the witnesses, or the testimony amongst yourselves or anyone else. Please do not do any research regarding this case, directly or indirectly, from any source whatsoever, on the internet, on social media, on your phones. Please do not watch any news. Please do not read any newspapers. I hope that you all have a nice rest of this afternoon back at your normal lives. I hope you have a nice weekend. I'm going to see you all Monday morning, which is Monday, June 26th at 9 o'clock in the jury room. If you'll leave the notepads in your chairs, they will be waiting for you Monday morning, and we will conclude the trial on Monday morning. I'll see you then.
Good night.
Okay. Okay, we're outside the presence of the jury. Everyone can be seated. Both the state and the defense having now rested their case, and that's the close of all the evidence. Any renewed motions on behalf of Mr. Peterson?
Yes, Your Honor. First, we renew all motions that we have made throughout this trial and pretrial, including the motion to dismiss. And now we would move for a judgment of acquittal. Now that the burden is different, it shifts to looking at this case in the light most favorable to the defense. We would renew our motions, and we would maintain again that the state has not met their burden, and they didn't prove each and every element in each and every charge, the 11 counts and the information, and ask that you dismiss this case.
State, I'll count anything you argued but the previous judgment of acquittal argument. If there's anything in addition you'd like me to consider, go ahead. Sure.
Your Honor, I disagree with defense counsel's statement of the law regarding a second judgment of acquittal. Basically, a second judgment of acquittal, the law is just standard, it's just about the same as the first judgment of acquittal, and that is, once again, looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, the reasonable men would differ. They don't really change between the two. The law standard does not change between the two JOAs. So I would ask the court to once again look at the standard today through the same prisms that the court looked at the last time. In addition to the argument that I made the other day, to Your Honor, I want to go back to a case that this court cited in its order on the motion, on defense motion to dismiss, and that was State versus Christie, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-E, 939-7-2-1078. Now, this court, for the most part, cited that case in order to say that the court was going to go with the standard language of that any other person would be the definition used for culpable negligence for a caregiver versus the defense had wanting the court to use compare mutual with another chapter, and the court said no, and the court listed four cases where it said in its order, this is why I am going to rule for the state and deny the motion to dismiss. And if you just give me a second, I'll get to your order. And this, the court found, this court finds it is not required to determine the disputed or undisputed facts of this case. The determination will be made by the jury based on the evidence presented at trial. In support of this conclusion, this court notes standard jury criminal instructions 16.5 and 16.6, as published by the Florida Supreme Court, each require as an element of each crime a determination by the jury as to if the defendant was, quote, a caregiver for the victim. In further support of the conclusion, this court notes both jury instructions also include the verbatim definition of a caregiver as defined in 82701, and a copy of which the court attached both the instructions to its order. And at the top of the third page of Your Honor's order, which was filed with the clerk on 8-19-2021, entitled Order Denying Defendant's Motion to Dismiss, the court cites to Christie. The first citation actually is on page 2, and then on the third page, the court in parentheses after the case name says, finding a public school teacher was another person responsible for child welfare. So, Judge, if we go into Christie, there's an interesting paragraph to be found inside that case, which reads as follows. We further agree with the state that teachers stand in loco parentis to the students during school hours. A public school owes a general duty of supervision to the students placed within its care. Case law is replete with instances of schools, principals, and teachers being required to reasonably fulfill their duty to supervise students. The genesis of this supervisory duty is based on the school employee standing partially in place of the student's parents.
mandatory schooling has forced parents into relying on teachers to protect children during school activity. So the other day, the court was questioning me regarding the defendant's role as a caregiver, which is one of the elements that has to be found for the statute. And Judge, I would say to this court, it would be very difficult to parse out the defendant's role, the SRO, from the school's teachers and principals and associate principals. They all are there. A lot of times, kids, you go to drop the kids off in the morning at school, and they're all standing out there as you drop the kids off, including the SRO. And I think it would be insane to say that every parent doesn't think in their head, well, I hope they're all going to do their duty today in protecting my child or my children. And the SRO is at the school in the position where he deals with the children. Now, you had asked me the other day about, does he have a duty to all of the children? And I still maintain yes. But on this particular day, I believe he had a more specific duty, and that was to the kids in the 1200 building from 2:15 or so on that afternoon. That was his focus. That's where he went. And it was on that day that he truly owed those kids his role as caregiver. But you can also see from the videos and everything else, he calls the code red. As a matter of fact, in his own statement to Detective Curcio, he says to the detective, and on page 10 of 36, which the statement is in evidence. At the same time, I'm telling Mr. Greenleaf, get out, get away. He's not armed. He's an unarmed person. So I wanted him away from there. So I started to tell him, get out at the same time. I then hit, I'm on school radio screaming, or I'm sorry, school radio scream, yelling, lockdown, lockdown, code red 2, so you know, so the school was aware to put the school on lockdown that we possibly have an active shooter. And if the court will remember, in one of the dispatches, we hear the defendant say, gentlemen, lock it down, or lock the school down. And there alone, you can see the caregiver relationship itself. Now, there's a I'm going to make a distinction in causation and caregiver, all right? Even though I'm saying he's showing that he's a caregiver, that doesn't mean I'm not agreeing that there's he didn't cause or wasn't culpably negligent. But for the purpose of just caregiver, he's fulfilling his role. Now, earlier, and also in the defendant's statement, we find that Detective Curcio asked the defendant, what were you doing in that time period just before you got the first notice that something was wrong at MSD? And what he was doing was actually waiting for the father of a student to arrive at the school. During the lunch break that day, there were some girls in the parking lot. They were in an area they weren't supposed to be in. The defendant wasn't there, but some of the other monitors were. They went over, they looked into the situation, and inside one of the girls' cars, they found a fraudulent ID. And so that was then given to the defendant and for him to deal with when he had time to deal with it. So he had already called the girl's father and had set up a meeting at the end of the school day with the father and with the girl, because that's one of the things he does. He handles when things go wrong on the campus criminally or crime-wise. That's his duty to investigate and find out what's going on, but he also works along with the students. And that takes us back to that contract that I believe it was Lieutenant Colonel Samaru, who went over the contract between Parkland and the Broward Sheriff's Office concerning SROs. And that, of course, is also in evidence. And what I was just speaking about is in the contract.
I want to go through it in order, so I don't want to jump around, but in the contract under Article 2, Section 2.05, Duties of SRO, an SRO shall not function as a school disciplinarian or a security officer and shall not intervene in the normal disciplinary actions of the participating schools. Each assigned SRO shall act at all times within the scope of authority granted to the SRO by applicable law. Each SRO shall perform duties including with A. That south end of the school seems to be well secured. No one seems to be indicating that there's anything wrong south of his position. It's all the problems north of it. So, since the court has already ruled that the caregiver needs to be found by the jury, and the state has put out evidence that shows that he is a caregiver, we would ask that the court then go ahead and deny the motion for judgment of acquittal in regard to that area and allow the jury to make that determination. They've got the facts in front of them. They're the ones who will make that determination, and that's how, if you read the court your own order, that's how the court, it sounds how the court wants it to be. Now, I know the other day the court also had a, asked questions about cause. So, again, if you look at Christie, and almost a lot of the cases that have to do with child neglect, what happened in Christie? What were the facts in Christie? Well, it was that a teacher was charged with child neglect, and the teacher had a teacher's aide. And the teacher's aide was bounding or tying up the kids and, I don't know, doing stuff to the kids. And the teacher didn't do anything. Just sat there and let the teacher's aide have a field day. Go ahead. Do what you're going to do. And so, sure, when you abuse a person or a child directly, then you get charged with child abuse. But when you have this sort of indirect, this culpable negligence, which you had in Christie, they charge the teacher also with culpable negligence. It was without harm, I guess. It wasn't as bad. The children were injured, but nonetheless, that's how it can be through, I don't know if this is the right way to say it, but it'd be through a third party in the sense that you don't actually do the abuse, you don't actually do the injury, but in the background, you're probably negligent. You're a cause of that injury. You're willful. A disregard ends up in that particular child being injured, and you've done nothing about it. It would be almost as though it's a little bit of an extreme example, but if you're at the beach your child is out there in the water, gets caught in a rip current, and you see that, and you see your child struggling, and you stand at the edge of the water, and you just don't do anything. You go back and sit down on the sand and sort of just sit there, and you don't do a thing. You don't run for help. You don't try to go in the water. You don't do anything. That's a problem. You need to react. And so, if the court's initial problem with causation, I think Christie at least helps to answer the fact that, look, you can charge somebody who didn't actually do the injuries. And here in the information, it reads, I'll use count three as an example. Thereby allowing Joaquin Oliver to be shot and killed with a firearm by another person, and in doing so cause great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement to said child. And that's, again, through omission, but it also can be through act. So it doesn't have to be just omission. It can be doing things that caused the child to be injured. For example, in this case,
when the defendant sets out that perimeter. Don't come within so many feet of the 1300 and 1200 and the 1300 building. He is causing a delay in law enforcement response. Meanwhile, we have up on the third floor, Anthony Borges, who's in horrible pain, blood everywhere. You have Stacey LaPel, who's been hit by gunfire. You also have Marian Kampuchenko. There are people in that building that are alive and need help, and yet the defendant has called out onto BSO radio something that will slow people down and keep them away, and there's no policy behind that. So it doesn't just have to be omission. It doesn't just have to be, oh, you didn't go in and get the killer. There's more to it than that. And I think the court can see from the information, when we list failing and refusing to attempt to investigate the source of the gunshots, fleeing approximately 75 feet away and then staying there for the remainder of the time, refusing to speak with those five students who come out of that building. Now, that brings us to the issue of tunnel vision. If you're looking at causation, you're looking at culpable negligence, I don't think the court wants to be making a decision as to whether or not the defendant had tunnel vision or not, that he couldn't see those huddled kids in the parking lot that Sobley saw, who was walking toward them. It's a decision for the jury. So I think the law is there. The law says, right, culpable negligence, so it could be a sort of a person who doesn't do the injury to the children can still be held responsible. All right, and then you move forward. Well, the state has given, you know, tons of facts that indicate that the defendant did not do what we felt he should have done. His training told him to do that day. He doesn't go to those kids in the parking lot. But those are questions for the jurors to decide. And that's why I think that I wanted to make sure today, I know it's a little bit repetitive, but those were the issues that the court was concerned about, and I wanted to make sure they were well covered. And if the court had any further concerns or questions, I'd be more than glad and happy to address them. But as I said the other day, it's there's plenty there to send this case to the jury. Now, looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, we have given enough evidence for the court to be able to allow the jurors to let the jurors make the decision. You've got the law down. Now they need to get the facts down.
And you think Christie supports the position that the person charged under the statute doesn't have to be the person who's committing the harm?
Yes. Okay. They're not physically committing the harm, right?
Right.
They're in action. And you know, if you look at the, you cited four cases, I believe, and there's three others in your motion. But if you go through the case law, there's lots of instances where it's a third party that is, being charged with a third. I use that term. They're being charged. A party is being charged with culpable negligence. That whatever they did resulted directly or indirectly in harm to another person.
Mr. Agar, shall I give you the last word if there's anything else you want?
This case can't plausibly be analogized to Christie or even the other ones that Mr. Klinger provided. You know, I may have juvenile clients that I treat as my own children, but they're not my children. They're not legally my children, and I'm not their caregiver. So merely being as wonderful as my client was as a school resource officer and acting as if they were his children doesn't make him his own and doesn't make him a legal caregiver. And secondly, the court heard the facts of this case. It fell way short of the causation that is required to let the jurors hear this case. I'm asking that you do the grant this motion.
Okay, well, understanding at this point in the proceedings, all the evidence is closed, I'm well aware that it's a different standard. Again, I don't know what part of the evidence, witnesses, or testimony the jury's going to believe or not believe. They certainly, I think, could find that the state has proven the elements of each charge beyond a reasonable doubt, or they may, in fact, find that the state has failed to do that, but that's going to be their decision to make, not mine. So, respectfully, the renewed motion for judgment of acquittal is going to be denied, I will enter the appropriate written order. Next. If we could do the charge conference now, then I could send you out of here today with the final set of jury instructions you would have over the weekend to prepare your closing arguments. I previously emailed each side preliminary jury instructions, but if you don't have them, we got a paper copy.
Thank you.
There you go. State, do you need a paper copy?
I have.
Okay.
Okay. Did the court receive our motion?
Yeah, I'll get to that.
Thank you.
I'll just take them in order. I know that the defense did file yesterday, June 22nd, a motion to include additional jury instruction regarding the definition of a caregiver. I'll just handle it like any other charge conference. Each side's got the instructions in front of them. We'll just go one page at a time, one instruction at a time. I'll ask either side if you have any objections or any additional requests, anything that needs to be changed. If you bear with me 1 minute, I will print out a new version of it and give it to you so you can leave here today with what the final instructions would be. So, Uh, 2.7, the introduction to closing arguments. It's not going to be included, so I'm going to read that to the jurors before the closing arguments. So the first one after that will be 3.1, introduction to final instructions. I will read the standard instruction in its entirety. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 3.2, statement of charge as follows. Scott Peterson, the defendant in this case, has been accused of the crimes of neglect of a child, great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. Neglect of a child, great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. Neglect of a child, great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. Neglect of a child, great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. Neglect of a child, great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. Neglect of a child, great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. Neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. Culpable negligence. Culpable negligence. Culpable negligence and perjury not in an official proceeding. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 16.5, neglect of a child, great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. This relates as to count one as follows. To prove the crime of neglect of a child causing great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement, the state must prove the following four elements beyond a reasonable doubt. One, Scott Peterson willfully or by culpable negligence failed or omitted to provide Anthony Borges with the care, supervision, and services necessary to maintain Anthony Borges's physical or mental health. Or Scott Peterson failed to make reasonable effort to protect Anthony Borges from abuse, neglect, or exploitation by another person. Two, in doing so, Scott Peterson caused great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement to Anthony Borges. Three, Scott Peterson was a caregiver for Anthony Borges. Four, Anthony Borges was under the age of 18 years. Neglect of a child may be based on repeated conduct or on a single incident or omission that resulted in, or reasonably could have been expected to result in, serious physical or mental injury or a substantial risk of death to a child. Caregiver means a parent, adult household member, or other person responsible for a child's welfare. I will now define what is meant by the term culpable negligence. Each of us has a duty to act reasonably towards others. If there is a violation of that duty without any conscious intention to harm, that violation is negligence. But culpable negligence is more than a failure to use ordinary care for others. For negligence to be called culpable negligence, it must be gross and flagrant. The negligence must be committed with an utter disregard for the safety of others. Culpable negligence is consciously doing an act or following a course of conduct that the defendant must have known or reasonably should have known was likely to cause death or great bodily harm. Great bodily harm means great as distinguished from slight, trivial, minor, or moderate harm, and as such does not include mere bruises. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Well, let me rule on your pending motion. This is where you want me to start substituting. You've requested the additional definition of caregiver out of 39.01, correct?
That's correct, Your
Honor. You want me to include that in all of the neglect of a child instruction?
Yes, Your Honor.
State your position on the defense request that I would include additional language from the standard instruction using the definition of caregiver in 39.01.
The same would be objecting, Your Honor. relying upon the district planner's stated State v. Christie, which is 939 Southern 2nd 1078, State v. Nowlin, which is 50 Southern. Oh, I'm sorry, Nowlin, N-O-W-L-I-N, 50 Southern 3rd 79, Brady, which is 111 Southern 3rd 810, as well as the Durand case, which I have to get the site, Your Honor. Your Honor, I can supplement. I can find that. But yes, the state would object to this, Your Honor. It's actually been promulgated through the cases that 827.03, as it stands, the jury instruction with the language of or any other person responsible for welfare is the standard jury instruction, should be the jury instruction for child neglect cases. Chapter 39, as defense has requested, is completely separate chapter. It has to do with completely separate allegations, more along the lines of DCF investigations, and when law enforcement shows up and that they're not responsible if they don't do what's necessary. These particular cases say that you don't have to look at those two different chapters in parallel together, and that they're separate, and that this specific cases say that the jury instructions that should be utilized when this count is put forth before it's there by the state is the jury instruction that are promulgated by the Florida Supreme Court, just as you put together, Your Honor. And as such, the state would be objecting to including 39.
Okay.
Oh, and for Durand, it's 820 Southern 2nd 381.
Okay, well, actually, I think it's in the language expressly in Christie, and I think it's referenced in the other cases, but Chapter 39 has to do with dependency proceedings. That gives a definition for caregiver. Chapter 827, which is what the state's traveling under in this case, 827.01 gives us definition of caregiver. That's the definition that the Supreme Court has included in the standard instruction. So over the defense objection, which would otherwise be preserved as to each of those counts, I'm not going to give the additional definition of caregiver. We're going to stick with 827.01, which is what the legislature included in the chapter that includes neglect of a child. But that's over the defense objection, which is otherwise preserved. Defense, any additional objection as to the definition of neglect of a child as to count one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So count two is verbatim the exact same language as count one. I will read 16.5 again. The only difference is Anthony Borges' name is removed and replaced with Kara Loughran. Besides that, the instruction is otherwise identical. State, any objection?
No.
Defense, any additional objection?
Well, I have a suggestion.
Yes.
Does the court have to read all seven counts the exact same language back to back to back? Can we come up with a way to say it's identical except for in number three, it's a different victim? Why do we need seven full pages of instructions to the jury, especially when they're going to likely get a copy of it?
Well, they are going to get it. Each one of them will have a copy of this. What is your request? What do you want me to do?
My request is that the court reads it one time, and the additional six counts, the only difference is that the number three, the only change is number three, and then you read and count, second count, Scott Peterson is a caregiver for Kara Loughlin. It's alleged that Scott Peterson is a caregiver for Joaquin Oliver, and you just read the only difference. No reason to read seven full pages of the same exact language.
State, your position on the defense request that I somehow abbreviate the standard instructions?
Again, Your Honor, I'm certainly not asking, making the court have to go through extra work, but I do believe, and I do object, the court needs to read all the counts in their entirety to the jury.
Yeah. Okay. Over the defense objection, which is otherwise preserved, I'll read each standard instruction as it's printed. Defense, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
All right.
It is Loughran.
I was just going on, I think someone told me that was how her name was pronounced.
Kara Loughran.
Yes, I mispronounced it.
Okay.
Yeah,
and my motion to include a definition that we have provided that we believe defines precisely what a caregiver is, which excludes law enforcement, I'm requesting that be read for each and every of the seven counts.
Yeah, no. I consider that preserved. That's you've made that same request as to counts 1 through 7. I consider it to be a contemporaneous objection and preserved as to each. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's count 2. Then I'm going to read 16.5, neglect of a child, with the name Joaquin Oliver. The other verbatim instruction will be read as is. State any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any additional objections besides the two, which I will consider renewed at this time?
No, Your Honor.
All right, as to count 4, I'll read 16.5, Kyle Lehman.
No objection.
Defense, besides the two objections, which are otherwise preserved, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 16.5 as to Jamie Guttenberg. The other part of the verbatim instruction, identical. State, any objection?
No.
Defense, besides your two objections, which are otherwise preserved, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 16.5, Peter Wang. Otherwise, the verbatim instruction.
No objection.
Defense, besides the two objections which you have preserved, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 16.6, neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement, as follows. To prove the crime of neglect of a child, the state must prove the following three elements beyond a reasonable doubt. 1. Scott Peterson willfully or by culpable negligence failed or omitted to provide Marian Kabachenko with the care, supervision, and services necessary to maintain Marian Kabachenko's physical or mental health. Or Scott Peterson failed to make reasonable effort to protect Marian Kabachenko from abuse, neglect, or exploitation by another person. 2. Scott Peterson was a caregiver for Marian Kabachenko. 3. Marian Kabachenko was under the age of 18 years. Neglect of a child may be based on repeated conduct or on a single incident or omission that resulted in or reasonably could have been expected to result in serious physical or mental injury or a substantial risk of death to a child. Caregiver means a parent, adult household member, or other person responsible for a child's welfare. I will now define what is meant by the term culpable negligence. Each of us has a duty to act reasonably towards others. If there's a violation of that duty without any conscious intention to harm, that violation is negligence. But culpable negligence is more than a failure to use ordinary care for others. For negligence to be called culpable negligence, it must be gross and flagrant. The negligence must be committed with an utter disregard for the safety of others. Culpable negligence is consciously doing an act or following a course of conduct that the defendant must have known or reasonably should have known was likely to cause death or great bodily harm. State, any objection?
No.
Defense, besides your two objections, which are otherwise preserved, any additional objection?
May I just want to interject, and I don't have an objection, because I've always believed that the court should read the standard jury instructions as they are given from the Supreme Court. I just, for the record, would note that the definition of culpable negligence given for the child neglect count is slightly different from the definition of culpable negligence given.
You are correct. It is slightly different.
So, however, that said, like I told you, I have always been one who believes in following the Supreme Court's jury instructions and not changing them. So I thought I would just...
Yes, I noted that myself, but thank you for pointing it out. That's what I'm going to read. Okay, next count, I'm going to read 8.9, culpable negligence, as follows. To prove the crime of culpable negligence, the state must prove the following two elements beyond a reasonable doubt. 1, Scott Peterson exposed Scott Beagle to personal injury. 2, he did so through culpable negligence. Actual injury is not required. I will now define culpable negligence for you. Each of us has a duty to act reasonably towards others. If there is a violation of that duty without any conscious intention to harm, that violation is negligence. But culpable negligence is more than a failure to use ordinary care for others. In order for negligence to be culpable, it must be gross and flagrant. Culpable negligence is a course of conduct showing reckless disregard for human life or for the safety of persons exposed to its dangerous effects, or such an entire want of care as to raise a presumption of a conscious indifference to consequences, or which shows wantonness or recklessness, or a grossly careless disregard for the safety and welfare of the public, or shows such an indifference to the rights of others as is equivalent to an intentional violation of such rights. State, any objection?
No.
Defense, any objection?
No, but I did want to renew a very specific motion, Judge. I was focused so much on felonies that I didn't look at the culpable negligence as closely. There is zero evidence that the state proved that my client exposed anyone, especially Scott Beagle, Stacey LaPelle, and Meadow Pollock, to personal injury. This is not omission in this statute. We're talking about he exposed these three people to personal injury.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're going to say he didn't, and the state's going to say he did by either what he didn't do or what he did do. But, again, that's a jury determination.
Well, in the felony, it talks about omitted. Negligence, by culpable negligence, failed or omitted. There's the omission language in there. In this culpable negligence, it says exposed him to personal injury. There's no element that says by omission. So the question is, how did the state prove that my client intentionally exposed anyone to personal injury?
Well, it doesn't say intentionally.
Okay, he exposed. How do they prove that he exposed?
Well, I'm quite sure that they're going to talk about that in their closing argument quite a bit, just like you can talk about it in your closing argument that they didn't, but... If you're making that part of a renewed motion for judgment of acquittal, I'll consider that part of your argument. Stick with the same ruling. Respectfully, it's denied. There's ample evidence, I guess, that the jury could find that he exposed Scott Beagle to personal injury, or they may find that he didn't do anything to expose him to personal injury. But that's going to be their decision. So over your objection. Okay, the next, I'm going to read 8.9. It's the exact same verbatim instruction, culpable negligence, except with Stacey LaPelle. State, any objection?
No objection, Your Honor.
Defense, any additional objection?
No additions.
I'm then going to read 8.9, culpable negligence, the exact same verbatim instruction, except with Meadow Pollock. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 18.1, perjury, not an official proceeding, as follows. To prove the crime of perjury not in an official proceeding, the state must prove the following five elements beyond a reasonable doubt. One, Scott Peterson took an oath or otherwise affirmed that he was obligated by conscience or by law to speak the truth during a sworn statement. Two, the oath or affirmation was made to Broward Sheriff's Detectives John Curcio and Jeffrey Curtis. Three, Scott Peterson, while under oath, made the statement. Question. Okay. All right. Once you get closer and you hear those guys, how many rounds do you think you heard? Answer. It wasn't many. Two, three. Question. Okay. Answer. So I'm right there. I'm on the radio. I can hear the units coming. And the next thing while I'm keeping an eye on the door in the building, I don't, no shots, nothing anymore. It's quiet. Question. All right, what happens from there? Answer. And he, Officer Tim Burton, runs up by the tree, and I'm just telling him, you know what I heard. I heard a couple of shots, haven't heard anything since, and he's just taking cover by, you know, behind the tree. I'm taking cover here, and units are now starting, you know, no more gunshots, and units are starting to come in. Question. Okay, now, did you ever see, you know, while everybody is starting to arrive, did you ever see any of the students leave Building 12 at all? Answer, yes. Question, which were they all the doors or answer? No, they were evacuating and they were telling them to, they were taken out and the kids were going out toward the parking lot. Question, okay, but that's when officers, answer, when the officers came. Question, inaudible. Answer, but we didn't see any kids. No, when I was on the scene there were no individual kids running out, none. Question, okay, so there was no kids that ran out to say to you guys, hey, there's a guy up there or anything of that? Answer, no. Question, you didn't see any kids until people started being evacuated by the police? Answer, yes. 4, the statement was false. 5, Scott Peterson did not believe the statement was true when he made it. Knowledge of the materiality of the statement is not an element of this crime, and the defendant's mistaken belief that his statement was not material is not a defense to the charge. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection?
No.
All right, next I'm going to read 3.4 when there are lesser included crimes or attempts as follows. In considering the evidence, you should consider the possibility that although the evidence may not convince you that the defendant committed the main crimes of which he is accused, there may be evidence that he committed other acts that would constitute a lesser included crime or crimes. Therefore, if you decide that the main accusations have not been proved beyond a reasonable doubt, you will next need to decide if the defendant is guilty of any lesser included crimes. The lesser crimes indicated in the definition of neglect of a child, great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement are neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement, and culpable negligence. The lesser crime indicated in the definition of neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement is culpable negligence. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection?
Is the court going to necessarily read lessers regardless of whether we want them or not?
Well, I'm asking if you have any objections. That's what I'm asking.
Okay. I just didn't know if I can have a discussion with my client. We haven't discussed it yet, but is the court
now's the time to discuss it, sir. This is the charge conference. Now's the time to discuss it.
Is it an option before I talk with my client, the court, if we didn't want them, would the court consider not including the lessers?
Well, ...16.5, neglect of a child, the second degree felony, has 3 Category 1 mandatory lesser included offenses, which is 16.6, child neglect without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement, culpable negligence, and culpable negligence, which are both 8.9. There are no Category 2 permissive lesser included offenses. Your request is you don't want any lesser offenses.
I'm discussing with my client. I just didn't know if the court was inclined to entertain that motion. So
I'm inclined to entertain whatever you would like to tell me.
Okay. We'll request them, I guess.
All right. Well, I think the case law says if either side wants them, they're mandatory. I'm supposed to give it. Even if both sides said no, if I find that there's evidence of them, I'm still supposed to give it. But you're telling me you want me to give them anyway. So the lesser included for all 6 counts of neglect of a child with great bodily harm, permanent disability, and permanent disfigurement. I'm also going to read 16.6, neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. I will likewise read culpable negligence as a lesser included offense for those 7 counts.
Your Honor.
Yes, sir.
One of them is not necessary. The neglect of a child without great bodily harm, we pretty much stipulated for that. I don't think we'll be intellectually honest for them to even come back on that, perhaps since that's compromised. And that's not what we're looking for. So that count should not be read.
So what do you not want? What is your request, sir?
That we do not read the lesser included offense of neglect of a child without great bodily harm.
Okay. State your position on the defense request.
Sir, we want them read.
Okay. Well, again, understanding the case law tells me if the mandatory Category 1 lesser included offense, if either side requests it, and I think there's evidence to support it, there's certainly evidence to support it. So over the defense objection, I will grant the state's request. Those will be included as mandatory Category 1 lesser included offenses. All right, I'm then going to read 16.6, neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. The exact same 16.6 verbatim instruction I previously read, except now will be with Anthony Borges. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, besides your three objections, which I consider renewed and contemporaneous, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 16.6, neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement, the verbatim instruction for Kara Loughran. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any additional objection besides the three which are already preserved?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 16.6, neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement for Joaquin Oliver. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, besides the three objections already preserved, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 16.6, neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement for Kyle Lehman. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, besides the three objections that are already preserved, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 16.6, neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. Jamie Gutenberg. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, besides the three objections already raised and preserved, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 16.6, neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement. Peter Wang. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, besides the three objections already raised and preserved, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
Right. I'm then going to read 8.9, culpable negligence, the same culpable negligence instruction that I previously read, except it will be for Anthony Borges. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I will then read 8.9, culpable negligence for Kara Loughran. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I will then read 8.9, culpable negligence, Joaquin Oliver. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I will then read 8.9, culpable negligence, Kyle Lehman. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I will then read culpable negligence, 8.9, Jamie Gutenberg. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
I will then read culpable negligence, 8.9, Peter Wang. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, any additional objection?
Your Honor.
No?
No.
Okay. I'm then going to read 8.9, culpable negligence, Marion Kabachenko. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
All right, then I'm going to read 3.7, plea of not guilty, reasonable doubt, and burden of proof. I will read the standard instruction in its entirety. State, any objections?
No objection.
Defense, any objection?
No.
I'm then going to read 3.9, weighing the evidence. This one will have to be edited in some form or fashion. I always read paragraphs 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. State, let me ask you first, are you requesting that I read paragraphs 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10?
Not 6, Your Honor. Not 7. I think 8 applies, Your Honor. Note 9 and note 9.
All right, defense, the state's asking me to read paragraphs 1 through 5 as well as number 8. Are you requesting 6, 7, 9, or 10?
No.
Okay, so I'll take out 6, 7, 9, and 10. They'll be renumbered paragraphs 1 through 6. I will then read the remaining paragraphs on the bottom of that page, including the bottom paragraph, which starts with expert witnesses or like other witnesses. We did have expert testimony. Going on to the second page, the first full paragraph on the second page talks about accomplice or co-defendant testimony. I don't think we had any of that. State, any objection if I take that out?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection if I take that out?
No, Your Honor.
The next paragraph talks about the testimony of a child. I don't think we had any child testimony. State, any objection if I take that out?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection if I take that out?
No, Your Honor.
The next paragraph talks about the defendant becoming a witness. The defendant is not going to be a witness in the case. State, any objection if I take that out?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection?
No.
And then the last two paragraphs will stay in as part of the standard instruction. If you give me one moment, I will give you an amended version of 3.9. Thank you. State, any objection to the amended 3.9?
No, Your
Honor. Defense, any objection to the amended 3.9?
No, Your Honor.
All right, I'm then going to read 3.9A, defendant not testifying, the standard instruction in its entirety. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
3.9B, defendant's statements. There are statements alleged to be made by the defendant outside the presence of the jury. Defense, I'll ask you if you want me to read the standard instruction in its entirety. I will be more than happy to do so.
State, right?
No, I'm asking you first.
What do
you,
I'm sorry.
If you want me to read it, I'll read it.
No, it's completely not relevant. We're not alleging that it doesn't apply, so no.
I mean, it's usually for interrogations of suspects, so.
Right.
State, the defense wants me to take out 3.9B. You have any objection to that request?
I do not.
Okay, so 3.9B will be out. I'm then going to read 3.10, rules for deliberation, the standard instruction in its entirety. The only change is I remove the paragraph that talks about questions that the jury asked that the witnesses were not allowed to answer because I don't let jurors ask questions. But besides that, it's the standard instruction. State, any objection?
No.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 3.11, the cautionary instruction, the standard instruction in its entirety. State, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 3.12, verdict as follows. You may find the defendant guilty as charged, or guilty of such lesser included crimes as the evidence may justify, or not guilty. If you return a verdict of guilty, it should be for the highest offense on the verdict form for each count that has been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. If you find that no offense has been proven beyond a reasonable doubt, then of course your verdict must be not guilty. The verdict must be unanimous. That is, all of you must agree to the same verdict. Only one verdict may be returned as to each crime charged. The verdict must be in writing, and for your convenience, the necessary verdict forms have been prepared for you. They are as follows. Putting aside the verdict forms momentarily, state, any objection to 3.12?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 3.12A, single defendant, multiple counts, as follows. A separate crime is charged in each count of the information, and although they have been tried together, each crime and the evidence applicable to it must be considered separately, and a separate verdict returned as to each. A finding of guilty or not guilty as to one crime must not affect your verdict as to the other crimes charged. State, any objection?
No objection, Your Honor.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
I'm then going to read 3.13, submitting the case to the jury, the standard instruction in its entirety, the next to last paragraph on the bottom. I have made the elections, so the paragraph reads as follows. During the trial, items were received into evidence as exhibits. You may examine whatever exhibits you think will help you in your deliberations. These exhibits will be sent into the jury room with you when you begin to deliberate. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
And I know State, in my normal courtroom, I would usually rely on you to get a clear laptop to go back to the jury room. I believe this jury room is equipped with that, has that equipment already.
It is one issue, Judge. So the external hard drive that has all the surveillance is very difficult to navigate. And there's, yeah. It's also password protected. So if the court wants, we can give the information to the deputy or to somebody. I'm not sure how we would either pass that information to them or if they have to come into the court.
You're talking about State's Exhibit 5?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, I'll think about that when this comes. So my inclination right off the top of my head would be I wouldn't say anything to the jury about it. We'll send everything back. If they have an issue, I'm sure they'll let me know that they're having an issue with trying to look at something. But let me think about that. I'm not going to authorize the deputies or anyone to have communication with the jurors outside of our presence. They're not going to do that. So let me think about that one for a little bit. Okay, so then after that, State, any objection to 13.13?
No.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
All right, so then I have 11 verdict forms. 1 through 6 are identical. They read as follows. There's 4 choices. We, the jury, find as follows as the defendant in this case. Check only one. A, the defendant is guilty of neglect of a child. Great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement as charged in the information. B, the defendant is guilty of neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement, a lesser included offense. C, the defendant is guilty of culpable negligence, a lesser included offense. D, the defendant is not guilty. And there's a place for the 4 person to print and sign their name. I have to change these so it says June instead of July. State, any objection?
No.
Defense, without waiving your prior objections as to the lesser includeds that you did or did not want contained therein, any objection to the verdict form?
No, Your Honor.
All right, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, those verdict forms are all identical. I will also be sending back with the jury a copy of the information, the charging document, so they can match those up. I'll have to change all these, which I'll do as soon as we're off the record today, so it says June instead of July at the bottom. Count 7. We, the jury, find as follows as the defendant in this case. Check only one. There are 3 choices. The defendant is guilty of neglect of a child without great bodily harm, permanent disability, or permanent disfigurement as charged in the information. B, the defendant is guilty of culpable negligence, a lesser included offense. C, the defendant is not guilty. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, any objection?
No additional.
And then as to count 8, the verdict form is the same for 8, 9, and 10. They read as follows. We, the jury, find as follows as the defendant in this case. Check only one. A, the defendant is guilty of culpable negligence as charged in the information. B, the defendant is not guilty. And there's, of course, a place to date, print, and sign for the 4 person. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, any additional objection?
No, Your Honor.
All right, lastly, as to count 11, the verdict form has 2 choices. It reads as follows. We, the jury, find as follows as the defendant in this case. Check only one. A, the defendant is guilty of perjury, not in an official proceeding as charged in the information. B, the defendant is not guilty. And there's a place to date, print, and sign the name of the 4 person. State, any objection?
No objection.
Defense, any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's going to be the jury instructions. Again, all the defense objections and or state requests, I'll stick with the same rulings. Those objections are all preserved and contemporaneous. Next, as far as time-wise on Monday, State, I'm thinking about maybe 90 minutes for closing. How's that sound?
Split it amongst us, Judge?
Yes.
No, Your Honor, we're requesting additional time.
How much are you asking for?
We're asking for a total between the 2 of us of 2 hours.
2 hours. Okay. Mr. Aguilar, do you think you can do it in 2 hours?
I haven't finished writing, so I can't tell you with certainty how long it's going to be, Judge. It won't be more than 3 hours. We just set a 3-hour cap. I don't want to worry about it.
Your request is 3 hours?
It's not. I don't believe that I'm going to speak for that long, Judge, but I definitely don't want to be looking at my watch.
Well, let me preface it by saying this, and I can press pause, and I can give you a final decision Monday morning if that's what y'all will choose, but in every first-degree murder case that I've ever presided over, including death penalty cases, I have never given more than 2 hours. 2 hours would be the absolute maximum. So the state's asking for 2 hours. If you're asking for more than 2 hours, I would probably deny that request. It would be preserved, and I'll give you the 2 hours. But I don't think it's fair to, you know, I'll send the jurors out for restroom breaks in between. But to break up the arguments over the lunch break, I just don't think that that's fair. I think all the closings have to be
given
in one shot.
I never intend to speak any longer than necessary to cover all the issues,
sure.
And I very well may be way short of that kind of time.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely don't want to have to be looking at my watch, and if I still have new material, again, I still haven't written, you know, everything yet, so I just...
I understand. So I'm going to say 2 hours now. You guys, you both can renew, both sides can renew whatever request you might have Monday morning. State, who's giving the initial closing argument for the state?
Hi, Andrew.
Just going. And then who's giving the rebuttal argument for the state?
I am, Your Honor.
Ms. Gomes, let's say it's 2 hours. How do you want to divide that up?
Judge, I don't believe that will go the entire time, but an hour and 15 for me.
You want 75 minutes?
Yes, please.
Okay. And then would you like some type of warning as you're approaching the 75 minutes?
Yes, I'd like a 5-minute warning. And Judge, can I ask for an additional 1-minute warning if I'm still talking?
as many as you would like. That's better than my call. Okay, so once you get to 70 minutes and then once you get to 74, I'll give you a tap. If you exceed the 75 minutes, I'm not going to stop you. Whatever is remaining, that would be the time remaining for the state's rebuttal argument. Okay, and I'll write that down on a post-it note and tell you the time. Mr. Igarsh, regarding your 2 hours, let's just say it's 2 hours, but I'm not foreclosing myself to entertain anything further. I can give you one or multiple warnings. Would you like me to do that at any point in time?
Well, there's 10 minutes.
Just 10 minutes?
That's it.
And that's it?
Yeah.
All right, so again, at 10 minutes, I'll give you one of those. If either side reaches their allotted time, I'm not going to cut you off in mid-sentence. When you get done making your point, I'll tell you that I'm going to need your final word at that point because your time has expired. State, is there anything else that you need me to address before we recess the trial until Monday morning?
No, Your Honor.
Defense, anything else you need me to address?
No, Your Honor.
So I would also ask you all, I know we're going to try to get started a little earlier, but if anyone's putting anything up in their closing, obviously anything that's in evidence can be up in the closing, but if you're going to put something else up in additional as part of your presentation, which you're certainly entitled to do, if you'll just show the other side, in case there's any objections from either side, I can rule on those in a timely manner. We can get going in a timely manner on Monday.
Your Honor?
Yes, sir.
I know that I'm going to be showing a PowerPoint, and there was technology in opening that was there. It was a device that I can put onto my computer.
Okay. I can make that same request.
Can you make that available?
Yeah, Mr. Svitz, you know?
I believe it's in your desk up there. It's a little dongle. It's a wireless device that can transmit to the monitor.
Not my desk.
Well, the chief judge's desk.
Is this?
Yes. Yep, that's it.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, yeah, we can get that set up for you.
No problem.
Thank you.
Defense, anything else?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, so the trial then otherwise is going to be in recess until Monday, June 26th at 9:15 a.m. Division FX will be in recess until Monday, June 26th at 8:45 a.m. I hope you all have a good rest of your afternoon. I'll see you Monday morning.
Have a good weekend.
All right, Madam Court Reporter, that is it.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.